It's important because, you know, and I actually talked about this on my first webcast, which, check it out, is this Sunday. It's infringement.tv. Check it out. I'm on at 8 p.m. after JC's Fireside Chat. But one of the things I talked about was one of the questions was posed, how do we keep the traditional and the modern? You know, it's like, how do we make the transition and stuff like that? And I mentioned infrastructure. You know, if you want to create jobs, infrastructure. If you dump money into the communities to create infrastructure to build, how does any community survive? Both spiritually and economically, is through its infrastructure. If you build the proper roads, that's going to create jobs, which is going to create taxes, which is going to make the economy stronger.
We don't call them taxes on the reserve. They're called user fees.
But yeah, it's like, yeah, it's all about infrastructure, you know? It's like, if you want, and that's the thing, it's like, if the Canadian government wanted to get out of this economic crisis, wouldn't it be putting more money into infrastructure be a logical choice?
Well, they did put a lot more money into infrastructure, but they just didn't make it clear as to how they were going to do so, because they announced all these funds, in particular for reserves, you know, for infrastructure there.
All right. Well, that was very interesting. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first live edition of Radio Freethinker, the UBC Freethinkers radio show on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. So the Radio Freethinker is a radio show promoting skepticism, critical thinking, and science. We examine popular, extraordinary claims and subject them to our critical analysis. These claims may fall into the categories of religion, alternative medicine, conspiracy theories, supernatural claims, or any other popular belief system that doesn't have the evidence to back them up. We're also, it's important to us to promote the idea that skepticism does not equal cynicism. Here's a little quote we came up with. The real world is a beautiful and fascinating place, and we want people to see it through the lens of reality, as opposed to superstition and non-evidence-based beliefs. So with me is my panel of distinguished freethinkers, starting with Don.
Hello, everyone.
Rob.
Hi.
And Ethan.
Hey, everybody.
Today, on our inaugural show, we're going to talk about quite a few topics, including some things that our supposed authorities are saying, like the Pope and the Canadian Science Minister. We're also going to have our interview, first part of our interview with James Randi. But first, we're going to head over to Don, who's going to talk to us about the dangers of smoking marijuana.
Hello, everyone. Yeah, so everyone's, since kindergarten, has heard about how dangerous marijuana it is and how it'll kill you if you have it. If you have too much of it, or if you even get near it. Well, we're going to investigate some of those claims and some of those things that they say about it. I think really there's three ways to look at this. First of all, pot. Is there anything good about it? Well, California has legalized medical marijuana because it has lots of medical uses. Some of them actually quite surprising. Did you know that you can use medical marijuana to help reduce the effects of Alzheimer's? Who thought? Tourette syndrome. There are a number of things that it's good for. In fact, I just heard on the news the other day that Barack Obama has instructed the
Attorney General.
Thank you. That's our tech guy helping me out here. The Attorney General not to arrest people in California for distributing medical marijuana. There was a big debate between the state law that allowed it and federal law that didn't allow it. So, medical marijuana. So it does some good things, but still you hear about a lot of bad dangers about it. Some of the dangers. Addiction. Most studies have shown that there's no physical addictability of marijuana. You can't get addicted to it physically. Now, there are some studies that show that there is psychological addiction, but psychological addiction goes with pretty much anything. Anyone who has a favorite toy that they just can't get rid of, that's a form of psychological addiction. And that tends to be about 5 to 10% of the population.
Don, what about the people who say that smoking marijuana will lead to other drugs which are addictive?
Yeah, it's a gateway drug.
The gateway theory. Actually, that's quite interesting. Some studies have shown that people who use drugs in general will go on to use more drugs. But people who use marijuana exclusively, or relatively exclusively, have no greater danger of going on to gateway drugs. Although there are some things with the legalization, which we'll talk about perhaps in another episode, that will lead to that. But actually, studies have shown, with regards to how people are socially adjusted, how marijuana itself can actually be beneficial to you as opposed to a harm. A study in Switzerland showed that people who smoked marijuana alone were far more likely to be well-adjusted, get along with their friends, have bigger friend groups than those people who didn't. And more importantly, those people who did marijuana and tobacco. And I think that's where you're going in with the gateway drugs. Some people have addictive personalities. People who have an addictive personalities will tend to use drugs in general and become more addicted. So if you do marijuana, you do alcohol, you do tobacco, then there's a chance you might do meth, you might move on to other things. It's not the pot that makes you leads the gateway, it's just your own mind.
So marijuana is sort of like a social lubricant, sort of like going out for drinks at the pub with your friends.
Yes, actually, and ironically enough, far less dangerous than that shot of vodka you have.
Right, so let's get to that. Like, is smoking marijuana damaging my my brain cells, and is it going to lead me to an earlier death?
No.
That was easy. Let's move on.
No, there has been no evidence of long-term damage to normal users' brains. So people who are, you know, do a joint, maybe a couple of joints a week, something like that, do it recreationally. There's been no study that has shown conclusively that it can lead to any damage. Now, those people who are heavy users, and we're talking people who smoke anywhere from 70 to 300 joints a week.
Okay.
Those people actually have had some minor health issues, but they were minor health issues.
Also, they probably don't have time to eat.
No.
Don, can you actually overdose on marijuana?
Well, you know, we've tried very, very, very hard. But no, actually, to be fair, and because this is a skeptic show, right, you know, part of us wants to say we like pot and pot's kind of good. But to be fair...
Not me, Mom.
there is a toxic level of marijuana. If you have roughly 120 grams of pure THC in your bloodstream... For an average person, right, that can be a lethal dose.
How does that compare to cigarettes?
In order to get that into your bloodstream, though, it's been figured you'd have to smoke about 1,500 pounds of marijuana in about 15 minutes. Now, granted, if you made it into brownies, that might have been a bit better. Compared to something like, alcohol, for example, alcohol, really all you would need to do is about 10 to 15 strong shots in an hour. And then you're beginning to reach...
Which I think has been done before by some people with dangerous results. The Century Club comes to mind.
No, exactly. Actually,
big, thick Russian guys.
And you get similar toxicity for nicotine. We were figuring out today that if you put a number of nicotine patches on your body, doable. It's a number, but it's doable. You could actually OD on nicotine. And caffeine, 7 liters of espresso. Can cause some people to die under 3 hours. Now, granted, you'd be going to the washroom a lot, but hey.
I guess.
But no, that going into, sorry, with what else we were saying is death rates. There are no death rates for marijuana. No one has died from marijuana.
So I guess all of those things we were taught as kids with those public service announcements, this is your brain on drugs. No one's had their brain smashed with the frying pan yet from smoking marijuana. So interesting to be skeptical of what we're told about that. Let's go to a public service announcement of other things.
Welcome to the show. You're listening to 101.9 FM. This is CITR, the Morning After Show. My name is Osvaldo Perez.
Van Music and CITR presents the 10th anniversary of the Morning After Show. On April 10th at the Legion on Commercial Drive, 2205 Commercial Drive. Doors open at 2 p.m. There'll be 11 bands. $10 advance tickets can be bought at High Life Records on Commercial Drive or through vanmusic.ca. You can also phone 778-862-1577. Playing at the show is Los Furios, Hawaiian Bibles, Los Malos, The Get Down, Michelle Carter-Lees, Sinister Black, The Rain in the Sidewalk, Tom Girl, Jess Hill, Mac Hunter, and the Aching Heart Foundation. It's April 10th at the Legion on Commercial Drive. Be part of the movement.
Morning After Show, every Tuesday at 11:30 a.m. You can listen at www.citr.ca or at 101.9 FM. The Morning After Show, 10 years playing your future favorite song.
Welcome back. So as I said before, you're listening to Radio Freethinker here on CITR Radio. If you enjoyed our discussion that we just had about the potential dangers of marijuana, you might want to listen to part two of our discussion of this, which we'll have next week, where we're going to talk about the law and the potential legalization of marijuana that some people discuss. But anyways, on to a completely different topic. The Pope has been saying some interesting things lately, and Ethan's going to fill us in on what he's been telling his followers.
Well, thanks, Elon. So the Pope has been making some pretty interesting statements lately. It started with, on January 26th, the Pope de-excommunicated a bishop, Richard Williamson, who is actually a Holocaust denier. And it's important to recognize that he wasn't de-excommunicated because he was a Holocaust denier, nor was he initially excommunicated in the first place because he denied the Holocaust. He was a leader of a schism of a very conservative branch of the Catholic Church. And it's been noted that this is sort of a very odd move, because is not the Pope now endorsing this particular bishop? And if he is, what does that say about the Catholic Church right now? So, the response has been immediate and very far-reaching. Jewish groups such as Yad Vashem and the Israeli Jewish Agency have condemned this. The Vatican has been in fire control mode nonstop. They've been going around and saying how the Pope is not a Holocaust denier. He does not endorse Holocaust denial. But I think the issue here is, why wasn't the Pope aware of this? Why did he even do this if he knew that there was a problem?
Actually, you know, I find it kind of interesting, too, that the Pope is willing to reverse excommunication based on some theological point, but he's not going to excommunicate him because he's a Holocaust denier. Denying millions of people's death, oh, that we can allow. But to sit there and say that you're a conservative Catholic, oh, well, that will kick you out for it. There seems to be a certain level of hypocrisy there.
Yeah, there is. And it's quite troubling when you think of the fact that Benedict, he is German. He grew up in the 1930s. He was in the Hitler Youth Association. You think that he would be a little bit more aware and sensitive to the issues of Holocaust denial, but apparently he isn't.
Well, it's not really much of a stretch to assume that the Catholic Church is sort of out of touch with reality.
That's one of the points that
Well, let's get on to the next thing to see as an example of that.
Well, yeah, another really big thing the Pope just did is he was in Africa, and he made the statement that condoms not only are not helpful in preventing the spread of HIV/AIDS, will actually increase the risk of spreading HIV/AIDS.
And so this is without any scientific evidence to support his theory, correct?
There is zero scientific evidence to state that condoms actually increase the spread of HIV/AIDS.
I think there's probably been quite a few studies that have shown it to do the opposite.
Yeah, many, many studies that show that. And it's this kind of anti-science statement is just so wrong. The Pope is making a moral judgment. He is a Catholic. He disapproves of birth control. That's fine. A moral judgment is his business.
Well, that's even something else to discuss. It might not even be fine,
well,
considering...
Well, he's not making... I mean, he's making a moral statement. That's fine. But he's making it an ethical statement. He's basically saying that using condoms is wrong. It should be a criminal offense, is what he's basically saying. That is unacceptable.
Right, especially with all the people in Africa dying of AIDS. It's basically an epidemic of AIDS right now, and it doesn't help.
This statement could lead to many people dying.
I wouldn't even cut him the slack of saying it's even a moral statement. The Catholic Church has been losing adherents all across the world, with two exceptions, Africa and South America. And Africa is its big growth area. And part of this is the idea of a conspiracy of white people going against black people. They're using the old colonialism thing, and that this is somehow a plot by the UN or the EU to somehow reassert the domination of it. And the Pope is kind of playing into this in an effort to try and get people to look at the Catholic Church as a stalwart for protection. It's I think a much of a political ploy as anything else.
Yeah, so I guess the thing to learn about this is the Pope, just like anyone else, you know, it's important that he examines the scientific evidence before making a claim, especially if it's something dangerous that a lot of people are going to listen to and potentially be harmed from. Speaking of people who are sort of saying things that are anti-science, this is surprising. The Canadian science minister actually was just asked recently if he believed in evolution, and he answered saying, "I'm not going to answer that question. I'm a Christian, and I don't think anybody asking a question about my religion is appropriate." His name is Gary Goodyear. basically saying that asking a question about if evolution is real was a religious question.
Well, that's pretty ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah, considering all the scientific evidence supporting evolution, like if he doesn't believe in evolution, that basically means he doesn't believe in the scientific method and science.
It's kind of troubling to have a science minister that doesn't trust something that most scientists agree on.
Has anyone asked him about gravity?
Gravity's a theory, too.
Or maybe something about if the world is round or flat. There's lots of evidence to support all these things. It's really scary because, you know, he's the one deciding funding for various agencies and groups. And, you know, especially in a time of a potential recession where, you know, money is tight, we want to make the most informed decisions about science and, like, what we're going to be trying to do.
It almost makes you wonder if something like this, if Richard Dawkins was voted to be Pope. You know, I mean, there seems to be a certain minimum qualification for certain jobs. And
yeah, there must have been some
belief
question.
Belief in science should be something the science minister should be in favor of.
He was appointed, though. He didn't pass a test or anything for this.
Well, a political test, I'm sure, but...
I'd be interested to see if he's a close personal friend of the Harper family.
Well, either way, I guess the thing that we just need to know is now that we know that he is... you know, has his viewpoint, we have to be very careful and watch about the types of things that he's going to be instituting as, you know, as part of his role. Just keep a close eye on him, I guess. All right, now I guess we're going to go to a station ID made by Strong Bad.
Then there's the utter misery that is college radio, where they apparently just let any bewildered freshman wander into the booth and try to run a radio station. Campus Outreach is looking for... hang on. College radio can pretty much be summed up in five words.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
All right, so you're listening to Radio Free Thinker on CITR Radio. Thanks for sticking with us. Over a month ago, James Randi, noted skeptic and magician and the founder of the James Randi Educational Foundation, he came to UBC, he did a talk here, and then he granted us an interview, which we've split up into three parts, and we're going to play part one of his interview right now. And note, Rob started the interview, and note the awkwardness at the beginning. I think it's quite humorous.
So just to start off with, we were curious why you were so eager to appear on the show. What is so important to you about skepticism that you're so willing to promote it?
I'm so eager to appear on the show.
Why are you so quick to promote skepticism? Why do you think skepticism is so important to promote in the world?
Okay, that's a better question. Because if you're not skeptical, you will buy things that don't work. You will invest money in things that will lose your money. You will make mistakes. You'll flounder around, and you'll perish. It's obviously much healthier to be skeptical and about things that deserve skepticism. You know, the presence of water in the bathtub can be tested very easily. You don't have to get in very gingerly in case it's sulfuric acid or some such thing. Things that are doubtful, you should be skeptical about them.
Okay, so how do you decide what to be skeptical about, and who can you trust? No one can be skeptical of everything, but it seems like there are some things that are really easy to be skeptical about and some that are tricky, or what do you think?
Well, if someone is trying to sell you something, be skeptical. If someone is trying to sell you on an idea or a product or a service of some kind, investigate it before you invest. That's being skeptical, skeptical in a healthy way, I would think, and in a productive way. If things sound very unlikely to be true, then that's something else you should be very skeptical about. And don't judge things... if you don't have the expertise to do so. You see, the so-called psychics are very successful with scientists in many cases. The reason for that is that the scientist, as soon as he or she achieves a PhD, they assume that they know everything and they can no longer make any errors. And that is not often the case. As a matter of fact, we've had an easier time, we magicians, down through the years, an easier time entertaining PhDs than entertaining children, because PhDs assume that they know everything and that they can't be deceived. But that's not true. They're more easily deceived. The more intelligent someone is and the better educated they are, often the better the scam artist has in deceiving them, because they make the assumption that they know everything.
So scam artists sort of prey on the fact that people make these assumptions.
That's correct.
How do you draw the line between someone who is a charlatan, someone who is trying to exploit the assumptions people make and their confidence they have in their beliefs, between a charlatan and someone who is delusional, someone who truly believes in these claims? Where do you draw the line?
Those that thoroughly, honestly believe in the claims are, as you said, delusional. The others are maybe delusional as well, and maybe scam artists and trying to make money from it. But there are people out there who know full well that what they're doing is a scam, and they're taking advantage of people's naivete and lack of experience with the real world. But you can't tell which one is which until you really get into the thing. I've often said, people say, but this person did a reading for me, and the reading was so accurate and such. Well, that's a matter of judgment. It may or may not be, but you cannot assume that these people are either honest or self-deluded. You cannot decide that in many cases until you have experience with it. But I've often said that someone like John Edward or Sylvia Brown, who do these readings, in some cases more or less successfully, they can't be doing it by accident. It isn't just chance, because you can't give a man a violin, a man who has never held a violin before, and say to him, play Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto, and have him do it. You have to know what you're doing. And Sylvia Brown and John Edward and these other scam artists have to know what they're doing, and they have to work it very carefully. You can't walk a tightrope without doing some practice and knowing what you're doing in it.
So for the general public, it seems that what, you know, they don't think too hard about the claims that Sylvia Brown and John Edwards make. How do you explain skepticism to someone who isn't a skeptic? How do you teach someone to be skeptical of these claims without coming off as arrogant or talking down to them?
Well, people should realize that they don't know everything about everything, and if they do, then there's no hope. You just abandon them. You walk away from them, because they're determined they don't want to know about this sort of thing. But you simply tell them that they can easily be fooled, and you can even prove it to them in some cases. So I'll give an example to your audience, if you wish.
Sure.
Well, I'm going to ask your audience out there, and if possible, I would like you to actually think of this very carefully and quickly. And hold on a second.
Sure.
I just got to get rid of this ringing phone here. Will someone take the phone, please?
Busy at the JRAF?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Always. I'll do a little bit of experiment with your listeners and with you too, and I'd like you to either confirm or deny. This is an experiment that works generally on audiences, and I've often done it.
All right.
I would like you to. I'll give you three different general categories of things that you can think of, and I want you to have the three of them in your mind when I'm finished, and then I'll try to guess what they are. I want you to think of a color, a flower, and a piece of furniture. Okay, you got those in mind now? Do you have those in mind?
A color, a flower, and a piece of furniture?
That's correct, yes. Think of an example of each one of those, okay?
Okay.
All right. I think that you'll find that upon investigation, most people thought of red, rose, and a chair. How close was I?
That was pretty close.
I had Rose and Chair.
Yeah, I had Rose and Chair as well. And how about you, Ethan?
Yeah, I had Rose and Chair as well.
All right. Now, the color that people almost always think of when you ask them to name a color is red. Some, the second one is green. But
I had green.
Okay, most people think of red. But when they say red, what follows almost automatically is red rose, you see, because you think of a rose as being a red flower. Red rose, and think of the third category. Now, how many different pieces of furniture can you name? Chair, table,
couch,
sofa, couch, whatever. Gee, I've almost run out. How many pieces of furniture? You know, an armoire, a desk, yes, but pieces of furniture are scarce, really, if you have to specifically name a piece of furniture. People don't think that that's a subclass that is so sparse in specific examples.
Okay, so there's this sort of implicit association that people are making. And
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And people tend to do that. And there are other things I could do if I were visually in contact with you that would show you that I can suggest these things to you. And I can do it in a way that you won't necessarily solve that it's being suggested to you.
All right, thank you. I have some questions from my co-host here, so I'll pass it off to you.
Hi, Mr. Randy.
Yeah.
This is Elon. I wanted to ask, at your talk that you gave at UBC, you overdosed on some homeopathic sleeping medicine. What were you thinking?
What was I thinking?
Isn't that dangerous?
No. Not if there's no content to the package that you're reading. It was Calm's Forte. It's one of the brands of homeopathic sleeping pills. And when you look at the list of ingredients, you see that there's literally nothing in it. It's simply milk sugar, pardon me, which tastes very much like chalk. And you have to crunch down 36 tablets, and it's a very dull thing, and it tastes just like chalk, not even flavored chalk. There are no contents to it. It's absolutely harmless because it won't poison you unless you happen to be allergic to milk sugar, I guess. But nonetheless, it is just harmless. There are no contents in it. It's with those particular sleeping pills, we calculated that in order to get one molecule of what the active substance is supposed to be, you would have to literally eat 16 average swimming pools full of the pills in order to make sure that you got one molecule. So I don't think it's very dangerous. I tried to avoid that one pill that had the one molecule in it.
Right. So then how are they able to sell a product like this and claim that it cures people's sleeping problems if it has no actual effects?
Well, it's an interesting situation. It's called the Grandfather Act, and what happens is that, it so happens, I should say, is that homeopathy was active in the United States many, many years ago, well before the Federal Drug Administration, the FDA, came along, and anything that was already active and in use before the FDA came along is immune from being attacked by the FDA. Now, that doesn't hold when you actually examine it, because heroin and cocaine and that sort of thing, they were here along with marijuana before the FDA existed, but they've made special laws, you see, to get over that and to make exceptions. They won't make exceptions for stupid things like homeopathy, but they will for hard drugs, of course.
I guess homeopathy isn't dangerous as opposed to marijuana. Well, not the marijuana.
Perfect.
That's a whole other show, I guess, as far as what the government thinks.
So, Mr. Randy, this is Ethan here. I was just going to ask you, regarding the claims of psychics, have you ever had a psychic admit to you, perhaps privately, that they are, in fact, a con artist and that you're making their life very difficult?
No. It would be refreshing to find this, but I have had a couple of people over the years who have tried to do an imitation of our famous Alpha Project, where we sent two young fellows who are just amateurs in mentalism, that is, mental magic, so to speak. They were amateurs at it, but they had a pretty good knowledge of how it was done, and we sent them into a parapsychological lab, I guess that was 1987 or so, in order to fool the PhDs that were there, the scientists, because the scientists decided to trust them. Scientists are, they trust photons and crystals of copper sulfate and various things like that, because these things don't turn on them and deceive them. But the kids were sent in there in order to show that these scientists could be fooled, and the scientists were thoroughly fooled, accepted them, and were prepared to turn out a scientific paper on the subject. But we had agreed in advance, the kids and myself, that we would reveal.
So that was part one of our interview. We're going to get you to listen again next week to hear part two, which is very interesting. And that's about it. That's about it for our show. So please, again, listen to us next week. This was our first live episode, and we'd love to hear your comments and questions. If you could email us at radio.freethinker@gmail.com, that would be great. Let us know, like, what you liked, what you didn't like. And now to close out the show, we're going to have a quote from Rob. So, Rob, take us away with a quote.
In the beginning, the universe was created. This has made a lot of people very angry and has been widely regarded as a bad move. That's a quote from Douglas Adams, author of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and noted skeptic and atheist.
And that's it for our show. See you next week. Thanks.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Time for sports.
Music Waste 2009 is now accepting submissions. This year's festival runs June 10th to 13th.
This summer, Music Waste will be celebrating 15 years of independence.
As the other local independent music festivals, large and small, have come and gone, Music Waste will once again highlight Vancouver's most interesting and innovative music. A testament to the strength of this musical community and the wealth of talent, Music Waste is Vancouver's independent music festival.
Submission deadline, April 15th.
Please email your submissions to submissions@musicwaste.ca. And, or for more information, contact Cameron Reed by email at cameron@musicwaste.ca or visit the website at www.musicwaste.ca.